Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining. We have the next presentation today from Applied Materials, one of the leading semiconductor equipment companies. With us today, we have Steve Gunnayem, who is the Group Vice President and the head of Transistors and Metallization Business Unit. Steve will give a brief presentation, and we'll open up for Q&A. Steve, thank you.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. As you said, my name is Steve Gunnayem. I run the Transistor and Metallization Group at Applied Materials. The transistor portion consists of products like implants, RTP, epi, gate, and the metallization portion is all the metals, PVD, CVD, ALD, front end, back end, kind of covers everything in that space. I've been with the company about 24 years and run many different products, so fairly familiar with this area. Before I go on, we're going to talk about building momentum for profitable growth, but really the focus of my talk is really going to be around these things, right? Smartphones, mobility, whatever you want to call it. The one thing that people underestimate is this is a very powerful computer. It's about a gigahertz of capability. A few years ago, when you'd get a laptop notebook, it'd be about a gigahertz. People think of it more for the features, but it's also a very powerful computer. The reason I mention that is because what's at the heart of that powerful computer is a transistor. Most of my talk will really be about the transistor roadmap, how it's evolving, and how it's going to change in the future, and how traditional scaling as we know it has kind of stopped, and it's really about material scaling going forward. I'll show you a lot of examples about that. It's really about the growth opportunities that Applied Materials has in this space as we move forward. First, safe harbor statement. You guys know this better than I do. Looking at mobility, the shipments on the left versus year. If you look at the green, the dark green is smartphones like the iPhone, et cetera. The lighter green is kind of emerging market smartphones, and then tablets on the top. A couple of important and interesting points. One is, if you looked at just the dark green and the very light green at the top, the tablets and the smartphones in 2012, there were more shipments than PCs. If you look only in a couple more years, if you look out to 2014 and you combine tablets and the dark green here, it'll be 2x what the shipments are for PCs. There's no question that the mobility era is here. It's strong. Since 2010, the wafer fab equipment market has been in a big upturn relative to the previous few years. This is what's driving pretty much all of our activity in terms of tool development day in and day out. If you look at what it does for the business, what we've got here is on your left, the wafer fab equipment market from 2006 to 2008, it's an average of those three years, is about $30 billion. If you look going forward, we see that average over a three-year period growing. It's growing now. If you look at 2010 to 2012, it's up about 10% or so, and then it's growing in the future beyond that. What's more interesting is if you look at the device mix. If you look at 2006 to 2008 data, more than half the business was DRAM and flash. It was more than 50% in memory. Very small portion was foundry, and then a chunk of logic. If you look at the last few years, that is completely inverted. Foundry plus logic combined is more than 50% of the business in the 2010 to 2012 timeframe. Going forward, foundry gets even bigger. This mobility trend is clearly represented in what's happening with the foundry business and its growing dominance of wafer fab equipment purchases. This bodes very well for Applied. Applied's position in foundry is very strong in general. It's stronger than the position overall as a company in memory. This mix is very favorable for Applied, and this trend seems to be continuing. Now, when I look at mobility in the context of the past, in the '90s and 2000s, it was all about performance, and it was speed, the gigahertz race, getting the fastest computing speed possible. That's what everybody cared about. and it was performance at any cost. It didn't matter. You were plugged in. You can burn as much power as you wanted. In fact, when we used to travel, we used to take extra batteries in our bag so that you can last the entire trip to Japan or to Asia. So performance at any cost was the motto. And that's changed significantly now because it's not about performance at any cost, but it's about high performance because, as I said, these things are powerful computers. It's not like they're not capable. They're very powerful in order to have all the features that you get. But at the same time, you need low power. And so you need to actively manage the battery usage, which is essentially the leakage, the transistor leakage. And so how is this possible? The only way that this whole mobility trend can happen is because of advanced transistors. And that's really where the focus of this is going to be. It's about advanced transistors and how they've changed and how they have essentially enabled mobility. And really, mobility is really all about the transistor. That's really the one message you should walk away from. But before I go on, I wanted to give a couple basics in case it's unclear because there's a lot of terminology thrown around. So here is a cartoon of a transistor that's on. And here you see the source, drain, gate, and it's in the on state. And the one thing that makes it simple is a transistor is really nothing but a switch. It's a very complicated, very tiny switch, nothing more than that, no different than a light switch, in fact, because as you switch the light on, you send a voltage to the filament, it turns the light on. In this case, it's identical. You put a voltage on the gate that turns on the transistor, and you get a current flow from source to drain. And that current flow is essentially the performance part of the transistor. Once you have this term ion, this is called the drive current. And so the performance and the speed is determined mostly by this drive current or the ion component. When the transistor is off, then this current ideally would be zero, but it's never completely off. And so the transistor is more like kind of a dimmer. You know, when you're at home and you turn your dimmer off and you think it's off, but it's really glowing a little bit. These things are always on just a little bit. And that's really what this drive for battery power is all about, or battery, increasing the battery life. It's all about controlling this I-off element. It's when you turn it off, can it really be as off as possible, which means you drive the I-off as low as possible. And I-off is really what people call leakage current. Leakage is when you're flowing current when you don't want it to happen. So this just kind of sets the stage for some of the discussion going forward. Now, in the past, the transistor really didn't change much. For 30 years, it was essentially the same material system. The gate electrode was polysilicon. The gate dielectric was SiO2. And for the majority of that 30 years, those two films were put down with furnaces. And as you know, Applied Materials doesn't compete in the furnace space. So you see that in the past, with this material system, in the front end space, there was very little opportunity for Applied. And it was only a couple steps, and steps that were not done in our equipment, so there was not much opportunity. That was the past. Looking forward, I call this a transistor revolution, and it really is a revolution in the way the transistor is made and the way it's going to be made in the future. And these are really big changes, and it started with selective epi. Many of you have heard of PMOS epi or silicon germanium. That all got fanned out into the foundry space at about 45 nanometer. That's when it was kind of universally adopted. And selective epi, once it goes into production at 45 across the board, it's there for good. You see this line coming out all the way down to 10 nanometer and beyond. And so there's really two things I want you to remember about this slide, and that is that every technology that first gets implemented will continue to be used in the next nodes because once you've enabled that kind of performance gain with epi, you can't go back and take it out in the next node because there's no way to make up that difference. A process like epi might add 15 to 20% ion improvement, and every node customers are trying to get more and more performance out of the transistor. So if they pulled it out, there's no way to make it up. So once it's in, it's in. That's the first thing. As a technology. And then the second thing is that these technologies that I'm going to talk about, whether it be epi or high-k metal or the metal gate in the high-k metal gate scheme, They're very sensitive technologies because they're what make the transistor function. And in the customer space, once they've designed the process flow and they've got a working transistor that's meeting their requirements, they don't want to mess with it. They don't change it at all. And so if you're the incumbent tool supplier and you're in this space, the likelihood of you getting displaced in another node is extremely low because customers just don't want to deal with it. Once they've got something that works and it's manufacturable and they're happy with it, you're pretty much in. So two things: the technology sticks, and the incumbency helps you stick. So it's very good for those suppliers that are in these spaces, and Applied Materials is very strong in this front-end space. The next node, 32/28 nanometer, many of you know, was the node that the foundries adopted High-K metal gate. And it started with two different flavors. One flavor was what we call gate first. And in this case, this is meant to be a cartoon of a gate first scheme. We call it the first generation High-K metal gate. And then at 20 nanometer, there was what you call replacement gate or gate last, is another terminology people use. And that was cut in, that's being cut in today at 20 nanometer. Now, the important thing to remember is that at 28 nanometer, there was both gate first and gate last. It depended on the customer. They were both adopted into manufacturing. But at 20 nanometer, pretty much all customers have shifted to gate last. So essentially, the entire customer base is using gate last or replacement gate at 20 nanometer. The other thing that's important at 20 nanometer is NMOS epi. So I mentioned here PMOS epi, and there's a second epi step called NMOS epi, which is essentially for the NMOS device being implemented at 20 nanometer. Now, most of you know about epi because of what happened way back in 45 nanometer. This PMOS silicon germanium got implemented. Many people really didn't know anything about epi until several years later, until the business started to grow. But think about all of the business for epi and selective epi for the last few nodes has all been just one layer, and that's this PMOS epi. This is a second layer. So it adds a significant amount of revenue and market share for Applied Materials going forward because it's a very slow step. And many people probably have heard this, that the epi process, as you move from technology node to technology node, it tends to slow down because it's much harder to make that epi meet all the technical requirements. So the film, actually, deposition rate goes down, the thermal budget goes down, and it tends to be a much bigger market. So at 20 nanometer, we've got basically all of replacement gate where Applied has very, very high market share in the Endura platform, and you've got a second epi layer in NMOS epi going into production. And then finally, on the roadmap, you see FinFET. And the FinFET transistor at around the 16, 14 nanometer, depending on the terminology that people use. And then even more new materials. A lot of people today ask me in many of the meetings, "So what happens after FinFET? Is there any more scaling, or what happens?" I think the important thing I said at the very beginning was that this is not about geometric scaling anymore. If you think about this, this is all material scaling. Started with the implementation of epi, significant and drastic material change in High-K metal gate, and then again at the replacement gate. And then going into FinFET and then next generation FinFET, there can be more materials like germanium or other materials that will be used to get more speed out of the transistor. So this is the roadmap going forward, and this is really the material scaling roadmap. And that's why you hear a lot of talk out of Applied Materials about precision materials engineering and material scaling because we do see it. It's real. These transistors are undergoing these material changes now. And the other thing to remember is these changes are massive changes. I mean, it's just a plot with a bunch of little cartoons on it. But as I said, for 30 years, there was no change in the material system on the transistor. And then in the matter of a few years, you see all of these drastic changes. These are massive changes. I think of it on the order of when the industry went from aluminum back-end
to copper backend. That was a huge inflection, a huge change in the industry. This is on that scale. It's a big deal. And finally, we're here today. 20 nanometers has not ramped yet. And so a lot of people think about this and ask questions around that FinFET is here. But in reality, 20 nanometers has not even ramped yet. And so for Applied Materials, where we have great strength in replacement metal gate, we have great strength in EPI, we're going to see the benefits of that implementation as 20 nanometer ramps in the coming years and as well as going into 16 nanometer and beyond. And then this shows just the transistor in general. And I want to show that we're number one in a number of technologies that are required to make a transistor. Number one in CMP, number one in implant, number one in PVD, number one in plasma CVD, number one in EPI. Collectively, with these technologies, we're at greater than 70% market share. And three of the technologies, implant, EPI, and the PVD, were greater than 75% market share. So this transistor space is a great strength for Applied Materials. And these changes are all working in our favor going forward. And I wanted to talk for a minute about two benchmark products that are used in making the transistor. And I talked about EPI, and I talked about high-k metal gate. So for EPI, selective EPI is done on a Centura platform. And we've got over 800 systems worldwide, greater than 80% share, number one position in EPI. Great strength. And actually, EPI is the first product Applied Materials designed or built a product for some 45 years ago. So there's a huge amount of institutional knowledge in the company in EPI. Endura is arguably one of the most successful platforms in the entire wafer fab equipment industry, over 5,000 systems shipped, greater than 75% market share for over 20 years running. And these two are workhorses of the transistor today and great strengths and assets for Applied Materials. So first, speed. So I talked about the fact that you need speed. You need performance out of these mobile devices, but you also need good battery life. So on the speed component of it, I want to talk about EPI because EPI is really designed to give speed. And first, just a second, I won't take too much time on this. What is EPI? It's a process by which you grow atom by atom on the silicon substrate. So for example, here, these are meant to be silicon atoms. And when you grow an epitaxial layer, you grow in perfect coordination with the substrate so that you retain the crystal structure, the underlying crystal structure. And to do that, it's a very slow process. It has to be defect-free. So it has to be very carefully grown. And you have to have a very clean, pristine surface that you're growing on. So it's a very complex process, and it's a very slow process. And when you hear about EPI being used, silicon germanium, PMOS EPI, silicon germanium means that you're sticking a bigger atom, a germanium atom, in the place of a silicon in this example. And that leads to strain. It basically puts stress on the neighboring material. So if you had a bunch of silicon germanium here and a bunch of silicon germanium here, and you had pure silicon in between, because the atoms are bigger, it's expanding the volume. It's squeezing the silicon in between. And that squeezing of silicon creates an increase in mobility of the electrons and greater speed. That's how this works. That's how this whole strain engineering technology works. I have this example, and this shows you that with a cross-section and animation of a crystal, these are meant to be silicon, you get this ion, this current flowing. This is your baseline case of a transistor. Then you come in and you etch out the source and drain, and you fill it up with silicon germanium EPI. And as it fills, it contorts this center. This shows you that you're stressing that channel area. And as a result of that stress, you get more current flowing. That's essentially what silicon germanium EPI is doing. So why is it so enabling? Because the capability you get out of this strain engineering is really massive compared to what traditional node-over-node scaling does. Traditionally, customers want to get some 15%-20% improvement from one node to the next. You can get that improvement solely from EPI alone. In fact, when EPI was first introduced, there was some data that showed up to 60% improvement of this ion, this on-state current. When this got put into production the very first time in real production, it was about a 25% improvement. That's a massive improvement. That's more than one node of normal development. and that means more than one node of improvement compared to all of the things that they would do to improve the transistor. And this is one step. They could see that in one shot. That's why Epi is so valuable, and that's why everybody's put it into production. The other thing about Epi is that you need a very clean interface. And one of the things that we did is we took a product we call Sekony, which is available on our Endura and another product line, and we're able to integrate it on the Centura Epi tool and basically clean the interface before we do the Epi deposition. That's something that only you can do in Applied, where you have all these multiple technologies that you can reach out and grab and bring in and enable the capability to basically add that second Epi layer. In reality, that second Epi layer could not be added at the thermal budgets that exist today, and having a pre-clean integrated on our tool under vacuum enabled that possibility. I think we're running short on time, so I'm going to speed up a little. This just shows a number of Epi steps. So at 3228 nanometer, there are roughly three steps of Epi, and it's growing as we go out. And into 10 nanometer, we see that the number of steps can grow substantially due to these new materials that people may put into production, like germanium or gallium arsenide or indium gallium arsenide, 3-5 materials. Beyond 10 nanometer, these materials are going to be part of the transistor. And this just represents what performance boost you can get from these kinds of materials, and that's why people need to do the material scaling, because there's no way you're going to get this performance boost based on geometric or lithographic scaling. What this shows is that this is an electron mobility. If silicon is here, if your silicon channel is here, you're going to get 2.5 times the speed of that electron with germanium, 6x with gallium arsenide. So these are the materials people are looking at for that next beyond 10 nanometer Epi channel. Now for low power. So Epi is all about speed. And now for power control, it's all about the high-k metal gate stack. And with that, I'll talk briefly about what people have done. And basically, they've gone from this poly, SiO2 system to this high-K. This is the gate dielectric. This is high-K. And this is all of the metal gate required to work in conjunction with high-K. You couldn't just put poly on high-K. It doesn't work. You have to put specialized metals on top of the high-K material in order to make the transistor function properly. And what's more interesting is that all of these metals, there's multiple layers. There's about 5 layers of this metal in the gate lath scheme. And what you're trying to do by doing that is reduce this I-off, this leakage current, from where it was with a polysilicon oxide system to a much lower value. And in some cases, customers got a 10x improvement of leakage or even 100x improvement in leakage by going to this high-K metal gate scheme. This cartoon just shows you the complexity of all the layers that go into this space to make this high-K, to make this metal gate, gate lath scheme work. It's 5 metal films, and that is instead of one metal film for gate first, and that's instead of one poly film for the previous generations. Very complex. These films are on the order of 10 to 50 angstroms, and you're putting all 5 of them in the space of a couple thousand angstroms. So the interfaces between these films are critical. They need to be done under high vacuum in many cases to preserve the quality of the interface and the quality of the material. And this just gives an example that with the Endura system, because of the high vacuum capability, that each film itself is actually multiple steps on the Endura tool. There's pre-processing, there's post-processing, and it's very critical to make this thing work day in and day out, 365, seven days a week, and preserve the integrity of these very thin films that make the transistor work. So this is not an easy thing to make work, very complicated, but very much within the know-how and capability of Applied Materials. And with the Endura platform, as I said, we've got 5,000 of them in the field, very strong position for Applied Materials. And then beyond that, it gets even more complex with the FinFET. With the FinFET, you need the same metal gate scheme. You just need more conformal films. You still need the Epi, both the PMOS and NMOS Epi. And there's even more challenges with FinFET around contact and other areas that that we're working to solve for our customers. So all of this change in the transistor is leading to opportunity for Applied, where we're really bringing solutions to the customers. And then finally, the number of metal gate steps. Today at 20 nanometer, there's five steps, as I showed in that previous slide. But as we go on to the next generation devices, there are some customers that want what they call multi-VT devices. So they'll have different threshold voltages on different devices on the same chip, which means they need more metal layers. So it could grow from five anywhere to eight or nine metal layers per wafer to make this metal gate scheme work. And that all would be pretty much on our systems. So finally, we're saying that lithographic scaling has kind of stopped, and it's all about material scaling. But also, other people are saying the same thing. And this is a quote from Arm, IBM, and IC Insights. Basically, at 28 nanometer, 90% of the performance gains came from materials and device architecture innovation. And so we see that as a world going forward, that the materials that Applied Materials deposits, etches, polishes, these are the things that are going to drive the FinFET and the transistor roadmap going forward. So key takeaways. One, the transistor revolution has just begun. A lot of people like to think of it that we're already far down this. But as I said, 20 nanometer hasn't even ramped yet. We still have FinFET. We still have beyond FinFET. There's huge opportunity going forward for us, and we're in a very good position to capitalize on that opportunity. Our leadership in metal gate and epi will drive very strong revenue growth for Applied Materials in the next few years as these technologies get ramped. And finally, the new materials part will really drive the transistor performance into the next decade. And with some of these new materials, like germanium and the III fives, it's a complete ecosystem change. You can't use necessarily all the same processes. You can't grow the same gate dielectric. So it even opens up opportunities for Applied in many other spaces. You've got to etch it. You've got to polish this stuff. You've got to grow a new dielectric for the gate dielectric. So it's really going to open up new opportunities for us in many adjacent processes beyond the deposition of these new materials. So it looks like a very positive future for Applied. That's all I have. Thank you. And I'll take a few questions.
Thanks. Thanks, Steve. Very good presentation. Let me just start off with a few questions, and then we can open up. I think you made a very interesting point about transistor scaling and how lithography is going to become not as important as transistor material scaling. So how do your customers think about the next couple of nodes and the time it takes to get to those nodes? If you can achieve performance without, say, going to 16 and 10 nanometer by adopting some of these technologies, then why take on the extra complex task of scaling to those nodes?
Well, I'd say that probably there's a drive for even more performance, more features on your phone, and more battery life, right? And so I think it's the consumer that's driving this backwards through the supply chain into these customers. They're driving their roadmaps in order to meet their customer demand. And I don't see it changing because I see everybody wants more capability on their phone. I particularly don't like charging my iPhone like twice a day. But I don't see that changing. And I see the customers driving us very hard. I mentioned earlier that even today, customers are starting to take 10 nanometer tools. So I don't see this thing slowing or changing. It's very aggressive going forward.
Okay. And how can you leverage your leadership in transistors to sort of look at some of the other share opportunities in the back end of line? I mean, the whole value proposition of Applied Materials has changed significantly over the last couple of years as you start promoting the transistor more actively. So how do you see that impacting your business in the back end?
Well, in the back end of line, actually, for foundry, we're actually very strong. We're in a very good position in the back end of line. All of that back end of line, copper barrier seed, etc., we're very strong. Endura PVD is a very strong product for us. There's really not a lot of impact, I would say, from the front end to the back end, but again, in Foundry, I think we're doing quite well on the back end.
As you think about 20 nanometer, do you see some of your customers ramping faster or slower given the challenges that they've overcome at 28 nanometer? Do you think that the ramp of 20 nanometer is going to be any different from 28 nanometer?
I think it could be, and what I would look for is, at 20 nanometer, some customers are going from a gate-first scheme to a gate-last scheme at 20. They don't have that. It's the first time they're doing gate-last. I think they're going to have a learning curve in how to make gate-last work. For the other customers that went gate-last from the beginning, it'll be their second generation on the High-K metal gate, so maybe they'll have an easier time ramping that kind of capability. That's one of the things I would look at in terms of the ramp. The other big thing that's changing from 28 to 20, the back end of line pitch is changing. That back end of line pitch change for the back end metallization is quite a challenge. Some customers have greater strengths than others in their ability to design a really good interconnect. Those are the things I would look for in thinking about who can meet the ramp challenge better.
Can you talk broadly about how you're seeing the foundry market right now? Are you seeing any strength or any sort of softening at 28 nanometer node particularly, and how do you see the transition to 20 nanometer evolve over the next couple of quarters?
20 nanometer, I think we've said that we see that pretty much ramping next year, and that's very consistent with what we've said elsewhere. 28 nanometer is kind of mostly done. We don't see a whole lot of 28 nanometer or 32 nanometer business. I think that part is essentially done, and really next year and beyond will be all about 20 nanometer and then the follow-on 16 first generation FinFET.
Okay. I want to see if there are any questions in the room. Maybe, Steve, as we can talk about the DRAM and the NAND market. I know you said that it was more than 50% of your business. You guys have a very high market share there. DRAM business has picked up over the last couple of quarters. How do you see that business trending over the next couple of quarters? Also, do you think 3D NAND, the investments are going to happen this year, or you're going to see some slowdown there?
3D NAND, we definitely see some acceleration. We've talked about it, that probably the early next year, we'll see some ramp in 3D NAND. There's been some public comments from our customers about their activity in 3D NAND. That we definitely see. We see a lot of opportunity going from 2D NAND to 3D NAND because we do feel that our position in a couple of areas, key areas like etch and inspection, strengthening in that transition, as well as I see it strengthening even in the front-end area, going from 2D NAND to 3D NAND. We see that coming next year, and that's a positive sign for us.
Steve, it's been almost a year now that you've got a new management change. At least, the announcement happened now, but I think Gary has been applied for a while now.
Yeah.
How do you think the culture is evolving, and what are some of the key changes that you're seeing right now which are driving your share?
Okay. I think there's a few things happening. When Gary came on board, he really did start to focus and prioritize the Silicon Systems Group, the wafer fab equipment part of the company. As the market kind of took off in 2010, that's been a greater and greater focus of Applied, but what was kind of lacking was more investment in the space, operating expense. With Gary coming on board, he's really kind of put his money where his mouth is, and he's starting to move money from other parts of the company into R&D for silicon. We do see a greater focus on product development, focus on R&D within silicon specifically. So that's a very big, I'd say a big change, a big positive change for the company. And then there's a lot of his personal focus on areas where we've been traditionally weak in market share. I think he's putting a lot of his personal attention in some of those areas to try to help us basically develop the right product and gain product differentiation. So, and I think that'll take a little bit of time. Over the next couple of years, we'll probably see that come to fruition. But there's really a great focus on semiconductor right now.
Okay. Okay. I think we are on time. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay.
Thanks, Steve.